Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Tales from a Bibliophile, a podcast about all things reading and the communities that books create. I'm your host, Carly Galorn Stewart, and this week we have a great guest. I'm super excited. Casey Bailey is here. Hi, Casey.
Hello. Nice to be here.
We're so excited. So Casey runs Longhand Pencils. It is a whimsical limited edition foil stamped pencils and paper product company inspired by pop culture. I think I misworded that a little bit, but it's a sort of stationery shop that is inspired by pop culture, which is really fun. And she has a lot of really fun, bookish pencils and other stationery. I actually didn't realize, cause I'm used to just seeing your Instagram, but I went onto your website last night and you have like so much other stuff. You have a lot of different fun stuff on there. So, you can find her on Instagram at Longhand Pencils or on her website at longhandpencils.com. And we'll make sure to link everything in that. But before we jump into discussion about that, I would love to know if you are reading anything you're enjoying lately or hating. You can also talk about a book you're not enjoying. There's a lot of both.
Yes. I feel like I've kind of been like going through phases this year, but one book I'm reading, like the rest of the internet, is Fourth Wing. I am usually I'm not a big fantasy reader. And I say that because I don't feel smart enough for fantasy. Like if it starts with like a map or a family tree, I'm like, oh no, here we go. I gotta like take notes. So it's a little bit harder for me to get into with all the world building and things like that. But I'm starting to get into this one. It's like, I've been going a little bit slower at the beginning, but I think once I get going, I'm really going to enjoy it. So I've been making my way on that one. And another book I read and loved was We Could Be So Good by Kat Sebastian. One of my favorite books of this year. It's fantastic.
I have not read much of them, but Kat Sebastian is great. I see them all over the place. I bought Fourth Wing like a couple weeks ago on Kindle. I had this like grand idea that I was going to do. Well, a couple weeks ago, I had this grand idea. I was going to do like a monthly newsletter for the podcast and realized I'd bitten off more than I could chew. But I was going to do like this little section in it where I was talked about a book that was like super popular so that to like tell you whether or not you should read it. Cause there's a lot of times there's that hype and it's like, which we see happening on Bookstagram right now with the Fourth Wing. Like there's so much, is it hype because it's just everyone sort of like going off of each other, feeding off of each other, or is it like actually worth it?
Exactly. Yeah.
I think I've read like maybe the first half of the first chapter. Or maybe I read just the first chapter. I can't remember, but I bought it. And then I realized I do some fantasy, but I have a very similar feelings. Like if there's a map or family tree or like I bought Pyrenee of the Orange Tree like 3 years ago and I've not touched it. I was like, I'm going to be really ambitious and read that. Like,
no. You're right.
maybe, but probably not. But I realized that even though I do fantasy, I really, really, really hate reading books and series that aren't concluded. I don't like starting series that are brand new. And so that's what this one is. It's the first in a series that is not fin- like it just, the first one just got published. So it'll be a while.
Right.
Yes, so
I can understand that.
It's an interesting concept though. And with the podcast, I'm doing more reading of what other people are talking about before I just sort of read whatever I was feeling. That's the other problem. I'm a mood reader. And so I was like, oh, I have great intentions to like read this book and talk about it for the podcast. And it's like, I actually don't want to read it right now. I'll read it 3 years from now.
Sure.
But it's an interesting concept. So maybe I'll stick with it. It sounded like book two is supposed to be published later this year. So maybe it won't take a long time to finish the series. We were talking about it the other day. So I work in a public library and my manager asked me about it because it's also like really hard to find physically right now. It's selling out everywhere.
Yes.
Which is like a weird phenomenon that I don't remember happening with a lot of other books.
Right.
I mean, I guess maybe I think we're similar in age, but like maybe when like the Harry Potters were coming out and they still did like the big pushes and midnight releases mm-hmm. and stuff, but I don't remember that like being a thing recently. So that was really interesting. But we can't we can't, like, we don't have it. People are asking for it at the library and like, we don't have a copy because it's so hard to get right now.
Yes.
So I don't know. I bought the Kindle version because it was easy to get my hands on. Sure. But I will, I'm a sucker for the like page design, the aesthetic of that book. It is gorgeous. The, like,
sprayed edges. Yes.
Yeah. So beautiful. Which I also think is really interesting because they don't usually do that for like first run, first press, like editions of a like previously unpublished author. Like, I think this is her debut. So yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. Yeah. Every now and then you get like that. I guess I will say too, I think that I haven't read the series, so I don't know for sure, but I feel like the Throne of Glass and the Sarah J. Maas series, like, I feel like they're mm-hmm. starting to conclude. And so publishers are like, what do we sort of push you on to?
Right. What's next? Yeah.
Yeah. So I can see that. But yeah, I am about to start. I love that I said I don't read fantasy. I'm about to start a fantasy novel, but it's for a book club, so I didn't pick it.
Okay.
I've been reading Daisy Jones and the Six. We're gonna do a podcast episode on it. We're gonna do like a friend of mine, we're gonna read the book and then watch the TV show and kind of talk about
the
difference. Yeah, and I've read it when it first came out and I really loved it. But I did it on audiobook and I'm like really enjoying it on paper this time too.
Okay.
But yeah, the one I'm about to start is She Who Became the Sun.
I've heard of that.
I had not heard of it until my book club announced that it's a new book club too that's just started that I am trying to join. Last month I didn't get there, but it's by Shelley Parker Chan and it is also the first in a series. It looks like the second one is coming out this year, next month. The second one's coming out next month, so there's that at least. I keep getting myself into this like debacle of my problem is I started, and this was a fantasy book, I started the Name of the Wind series and I fell in love with the first one, but it took me so long to get through because it's like Game of Thrones level of like world building and all of the family tree stuff. So I was like, okay, it took me so long to get through this one. Is this like, and then there's like a conversation about the authors taking so long to put the third one out. And I was like, I'm not starting the second one until the third one's out. So I remember. And like, it's still not out. This was years ago. And so I'm just at this point, I'm like, I don't know if I trust anybody anymore. It seems to happen a lot in the fantasy world too. Like Game of Thrones is that way. Like, I think there's still a book that I didn't read Game of Thrones, but there's a book that was supposed to be published like years ago that he still hasn't published. So Game of Thrones fans are just like, I guess we'll never finish this.
You have to have a loyal readership for that.
Build that really kind of do. Trust. Yeah. And they're on like book 8 or something. Like, it's an insane amount. I don't understand how people keep track of those. There's like, even watching the TV show is a lot. It's so much more visual, but, well, very cool. Well, those sound really good. I need to pick up a cat, Sebastian, soon. I have seen them everywhere. And they look really fun. She write? I'm so bad about like looking stuff up while I'm podcasting because I like I see stuff in my head and I'm like, oh, I have to know if this is. Okay. Yeah. I was thinking of The Queer Principles of Kit Webb. Is that the one you said you read?
I just read her latest one, which is We Could Be So Good.
We Could Be So Good. I think that
came out in May or June.
So it's your most recent one.
Yes. Okay, cool. Yeah, it was fantastic. So good.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm very like a romance era.
Yeah. So. Yeah, me too. I read a lot more of that. I go through phases, but I have been on a more of a romance kick lately. But I'm surprised I haven't for that reason, I haven't picked up Cat Sebastian before. My coworker just read the one I was thinking of, The Queer Principles of Kit Webb.
Yes, I've heard good things about that one as well.
Yeah. And I think it is a duology, it looks like.
Yes, yes.
So very cool. I'll have to check them out more. But yeah. Okay, so we'll jump into our main content. You run Longhand Pencils. We talked a little bit about this, but I would have loved to know. I'm obsessed with this, with your whole company. Like, I love pencils. I love stationery. I'm such a like physical pen to paper person. Like, I can't do digital stuff very well. But how did you like come up with the idea of it? How did it start? Tell me a little bit about the origins of it.
Sure. So I kind of like to romanticize it by saying that it's like always been in my blood to make this happen. I think it's more like, it's not as glamorous as I'm making it seem, but I kind of go back to my parents actually. So my parents were both from military families, and they met in high school in Okinawa, Japan. So like really random, but they were paired up in like a health class where they had to like be married to someone in their class and make like a financial plan for their life and, you know, all of that. And so they were paired up, and they like first really met when my dad asked my mom for a pencil. And so I always think like that was their kind of like origin story. And, you know, yeah, like I said, I romanticize it by saying that's how, you know, I got into it later in life. But I've always been a writer. I've wanted to be a writer my whole life. I kept really like embarrassing journals as a kid and still do. I studied journalism in college, and then was freelance writing when I started having my kids. And so writing has always been important to me, but I also just feel maybe it's like a millennial thing, or I don't know, maybe people just get to this point at a certain age in their lives, but you just like, you want this, like, I don't know, you lean into the nostalgia of like things that like brought you joy and were important to you in like those fundamental years of your life. And so I feel very much like going back to that feeling of just like writing in a journal or like writing something by hand, because I'm, you know, even with what I do, I feel like I'm always staring at a screen or like, I don't know. Yeah. So just like going back to that like analog feel of life, where things felt simpler. And so I am really just drawn to that. Especially as a writer. And so it actually started in, it was 2018 or 2019 when I was moving from one house in Austin, Texas to another house. And I was going through a lot of stuff, and I had, you know, I kept these like treasure boxes from when I was a kid of like, you know, little knickknacks, like my old hit clips and stuff like that.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah.
I remember those, by the way.
Amazing.
So yeah, those were iconic and classic.
Yes, very much so.
So I had found some little things in there, and I was looking through them, and some of them were pencils with things stamped on them. And I grew up in Virginia, so I was very close to DC. And so for like a lot of field trips, we would go to museums and like the Capitol building and stuff like that. So they had come from that, you know, state life when I was in school and going to these different museums and stuff. And I love these. I used mostly pens in college and high school. So I was like, I miss this. And, but I was thinking like, I had seen some other people stamp pencils and things like that, but I thought like I really want to learn how to do this so that I can stamp whatever I want.
Right. Yeah.
It would just be so fun to come up with my own phrases. And in 2019, the summer of 2019, I started just like researching how people do it. I should have probably done more research, but I kind of just jump into an idea when I'm excited about something. Same. So I just bought the machine, and it took me like a few months to get the hang of it. It was like quite a big learning curve for me in terms of the machinery, but and then I officially launched the business in November of 2019, so almost 4 years.
Nice. Oh, I love that. I'm very much a nostalgic. I think it is, I'm sure a lot of people people in every generation to a certain extent do that. But I think there very much is, even more so with millennials, like the nostalgia. Yes. And I think it's because, especially a certain part of millennials, like we grew up, like our young childhood was a very specific way. And then everything, so we watched everything sort of evolve. And so at least in my experience, like I'm always nostalgic for that sort of stuff. I think because everything sort of moved over, we watched it grow from one thing to another. But yeah, I'm a writer too. And so I like practically don't think I could write my novel or like try writing a draft by hand, just because of the way that I write, but I think that I would enjoy it so much more. I do like journal longhand, and I am like a sucker for a good journal or pen or pencil. And I'm always, that's the souvenir I always pick up too, is like the little, pen or pencil or little notebook or something. But yeah, that's so cool. It is such an interesting, like the foil stamp pencil is such an interesting product, I guess. And so I can see, like, I also very much jump into things and don't plan or research enough. I was just like, oh, a podcast sounds fun. Like, let me, I got lucky because my library owns like podcast equipment, but I'm
sure
wouldn't, you know, fully can see myself buying like the whole nine yards if they didn't.
Yes.
But yeah, I can see that the pencil stamping being such a learning curve. Do you, when you are like physically doing it, I'm assuming, and again, I have no idea how any of this works. So I'm kind of just making this up. But so like if you're stamping a word or a phrase, can you line the whole thing up and stamp it in, or do you have to do it letter by letter? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. So there's like these little metal cases. They're called slip cases, and you put the type, the letters in there backwards. So you can type the whole or set up the whole phrase so that you can stamp it all at once. But you are stamping every pencil by hand.
I was going to say, you're still,
yeah. There are machines I know that will do it faster and for, you know, for greater quantity, but for now I'm just stamping them all by hand. And we can get into this, but there are a lot of sets I have that are stamped on multiple sides and that are long enough that they're stamped two times on one side. And so it's been kind of me learning how to best do it, but yeah.
Yeah. It seems like on the surface, such a simple like concept, but yeah, if you look at there are like more intricate ones, like, you know, like you were saying, there are multiple sides or, I've always loved word pencils, or like foil stamped pencils. I have a few on my desk now, and my mom always buys the funny ones for me as like a gift.
Yes.
So I was super excited when I found your page. Especially the book. I mean, you encompass like a lot of different pop culture, like you have some TV and stuff, but like I obviously gravitate towards the book ones a lot. And it's a fun, like inexpensive way to like sort of buy into the like book that you're really into or the author that you really enjoy. Because also, I mean, with Etsy and stuff like that, there is more of it than there was like growing up, but like unless you were like Harry Potter or Twilight, like books don't really have merch. And so if you have a favorite musician or a movie or something, you can buy like a sweatshirt or something.
Right.
And it's becoming more of a thing now, but this, your company is such a fun little like version of that. So when you, has it shifted very much from like the early days? Cause it sounds like you're using the same sort of equipment and process. Is there much difference, in your process, like making and creating as your business grew more?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of been like a learning process from day one. Like, I feel like I'm just like, I went into it knowing nothing about like the machinery, but nothing about business as well. So, you know, there's been like a lot of failures and that sucks, but I think it's really valuable because I feel like I'm learning all of these skills. But yeah, it has grown over time. So, you know, I really started this and got going when the pandemic happened. So, people were not wanting to buy non-essential things, or, but mm-hmm. what I realized was, people do want things that bring them joy, even in times like that are, dire in the world. And I think, especially because like pop culture is, just makes for so much opportunity for community, online, especially. Like, there was a really good opportunity to like connect with people over different things in pop culture. So in terms of like how it grew though, I was just starting off like thinking that no one would care about what I was doing, because it was kind of just like, I really would love to do this for me. And if I can do this for other people, that's great. But it was very much like a selfish endeavor to begin with. So I think just most of all, like scale, the growth has been really cool, but also just like presents its own challenges, like having to buy and make a lot more stock at one time. And just learning. And I'm a one woman business. So like having to control all aspects of the business, like advertising and marketing and creating and packaging and things like that. And I've got four kids at home. So, just learning how to navigate the scale as it gets bigger. That's been a challenge. And I think also, because I've been able to like, meet more people, like I'm able to work with more businesses. I work with a lot of authors. Just being able to like have people come to me for things that they are interested in using for their business or their marketing and things like that, which is really cool. So it's just like it's been like a learning process every day, because I feel like I'm constantly learning and evolving. And just having to figure out how to move forward. But another thing too is like at the beginning, I kind of was like making a lot of sets that appealed to me personally. And they like, mm-hmm. There's all these little niches for pop culture, but I felt like I had to start like adjusting what I was making in a way to appeal to more people. And so, I would, at the beginning, I had like a Boy Meets World set, which I grew up on.
I love Boy Meets World. Love that. Yeah.
Love Boy Meets and like, World. But it like didn't really sell. And that was, that was like a little bit sad, because I was like, oh, I love this so much. Like I would love for it to appeal to people, but it just didn't. And so I have to like get a lot of feedback for what I'm making. And sometimes it's like less of a, like, this is what I want to make. And like, this is what everybody wants. And like, it's still a good balance for me. Like I still find a lot of joy in every set I make. But I'm also just having to like expand a little bit to what people are asking. I feel like I've learned a lot in 4 years, and I'm gonna just continue failing and learning. But it's been really fun.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because I've had a similar sort of experience doing the podcast. Like, this was just a thing I've wanted to figure out, a way to talk about books and sort of build a community for years. And like, I tried blogging, I tried Bookstagram, like it just didn't work for me. But mm-hmm. I'm a big talker. And so podcasts made a lot of sense. And so when I started working at this library that already has this podcast studio, I was like, oh, I'm just going to like jump in and see what happens. But it is very much like from the first time I recorded an episode to today, like it's a very different process. And I do, like you were saying, like I market and I edit and I produce, like I'm doing, it is just a one person thing. Like I have other people who come on and talk sometimes, but like they're literally showing up to talk and everything else is sort of, so it is very much, and like I didn't think of it, like I didn't go into it with the lens of like a business, but it like kind of is, and you do have to sort of look at it from that. And like you were saying, like when I started, I was like, I want to talk about these things and I want to sort of do this, but you do have to sort of, anytime you have any kind of audience or customer, you have to sort of adjust to them. Yes. Like you were saying, to what they actually, especially for you, where it's monetized, like what you people are actually wanting to buy.
Right. You have to find a good balance of like things that keep you like enjoying what you do, and having fun with it, and also like, hey, this is a business, or like, this is, you want people to engage with you. So you have to, you know, cater to them as well.
Yeah, for sure. Is there a, how do you sort of decide what collections you do for the pencils and things like that, that are not personalized, but like that you're making? I mean, it sounds like a lot of it is, like you were saying, a balance between what you're interested in and what people are interested in, like pop culture of the moment. But do you have a, like a specific process for how you decide? Do you like plan in seasons or like that? Like with the podcast, I'm like, oh, okay. I have like a loose outline of like, or a loose list of like episodes I want to do for the next 3 months or whatever. And I sometimes plan around holidays and things like that. But do you have any sort of process like that?
Yeah. So I kind of, for the last year or two, I kind of just start the year off with like a very loose outline of like, this is the time, this is the month or the time of year I'd like to have this set out. And like, obviously it changes a lot because, you know, people are like wanting custom sets or, you know, some like big pop culture event happens that I want to address or, things like that. So it definitely changes, but yeah, I try to have like a kind of a general like year outline of what I want to have out. And like this year I plan like, oh, I'm going to have a Mean Girls set in October because October 3rd is like a Mean Girls moment, you know? So I, have that, and like, I'll have like the holiday sets I want to have out. And then I try to fit in there like restocks of sets that needs to happen. So I kind of like, will judge it by season. But yeah, also adjust for like, you know, authors that I work with when they have books coming out or, you know, like events I'm going to or things like that. But yeah, I usually just will try to plan like a year outline and then try to be flexible. But I also have like a really long running list of suggestions that people give me. People are always like requesting things. So I just keep like a super long list. I try to think about the ones that I think will do well, things that I've seen. I feel like sets are usually better if I've seen the thing, instead of trying to like scour like Reddit threads of favorite quotes or things like that. So yeah, usually something I've seen and I'll usually like pull from those, to decide what goes where in the year.
That's, really interesting. Your last comment about how, you know, like, cause that's the same with the podcast. Like, I don't want to interview an author of a book I've never read, that sort of thing. How much of your like work time is sort of researching or reading or watching things that people have requested or if that you're trying to figure out if you want to do?
That's interesting. Like if it's like a book I'm doing or like something like that, usually while I'm working, while I'm stamping, I'll be like listening to audio or sometimes like I'll have my laptop and be watching a show or something. But otherwise it's just like shows I would probably naturally watch at night or like, I usually don't consider that work time. If it is, it's like the most fun work time because it's like research, you know, like I need to watch this show for research. If it's not something like I've seen or read or listened to, like I'll try to dig really deep and like I'll go to like YouTube and watch like favorite quote compilations and then I'll read the comments of like, oh, but you forgot this quote, and like I'll dig really deep that way. I can get down some rabbit holes that way, or I'll scour like Reddit threads or BuzzFeed listicles and stuff like that. But usually like if it's a set that I want to make and people want, like it's, yeah, I'll watch it or engage with it in some way.
Cool. Yeah. Do you, so like two part question, I would love to know what one of your best selling sets is, and then what like is one of your favorites that you've actually done regardless of how well it did.
Sure. So the Trope set is one of my best selling sets. That was actually an idea from a publisher that I worked with. I was doing some pencils for their like influencer boxes and she was like, oh, you should make a set for this. And I was like, yeah, why didn't I think of that? It's a great idea. And yeah, it's become one of the best selling sets, and the best selling pens too. The pens are, you know, people really like the pens as well, which I'm pleased about. Another set that's really popular is the Red, White, and Royal Blue. And,
oh, yes.
When I've done that, like I did it like two times and I was like, I can't do this set again. It's really hard and long and there's a lot of pencils. But people just keep asking for it. So I just keep bringing it back.
Yeah.
I bet I'm going to like put my foot down and say no, but people really like it. And
they're about to release the movie. So I bet that's going to like keep pushing it forward.
Right. I can see that.
It's a very quotable book.
Oh, it is. It's,
yeah.
Yeah. That one was really hard to pick quotes for. That's probably the hardest part of what I do is like narrowing down quotes and picking them because you want to get people's favorite quotes, but I also want to find a good balance of like meaningful and funny. And, you know, that book has just both in spades. So
yes.
It was really hard to narrow it down. It ended up like spawning two bonus sets. So I just couldn't, I can just limit it down, but so those are some of the best-selling ones. My favorite set though, it changes, but I really love the Jane Eyre set. Jane Eyre is my favorite book. And it was also just like a very complicated set to stamp. One of the pencils is stamped on 5 of the 6 sides. So it was a challenge. And obviously like I have, you stamp all the one side and then, you stamp the second side and sometimes you make mistakes. So like, anyways, it was just a long set, but I love that book so much. So that set is very close to my heart. Let me think, other favorites. A month or two ago, I released a Rick Astley set for Never Gonna Give You Up.
Yeah.
And like, that was one of those sets I just like, I think I like woke up thinking about it. It wasn't one I had planned, but like I woke up and thought about it. I was like, oh, this would be so funny. People always talk about being Rickrolled and whatever. So I just like made it that day and released it the next day because I was just so excited about it. And like, I think those are the most fun sets for me where they just kind of like come out of nowhere and people really respond to them. So that one was really fun too.
That's fun. That is funny. I like those moments too, when it's just like sort of organic idea versus having a planned. I like to plan, but I like the organic aspect. I like a mix of both. Do you like keep a stock of them, or do you like, so if you have like, when you had the new idea, do you like go ahead and make a bunch before you list them, or do you kind of list it and see how it goes? What's that process like?
Yeah, that's kind of been a learning curve for me too, because like some sets I think that are going to do really well don't, and vice versa. So, but you know, because I'm stamping them each by hand, I have to make a stock just for like my peace of mind. I make a certain amount of stock, and then we'll only sell the stock that I have, and we'll bring back, you know, the ones that are in demand and things like that. But some, like, I just make a bunch and then they don't sell, and some do, like that thing you do set. I made the set for that and was like, oh, I'm just going to make like this small number because I don't know how people are going to respond to it. And then they sold out in like a day or two. So it's just hard to know sometimes what people are going to like, but I usually just will have a set amount and then restock if I need to.
That's kind of one of the things that's tricky to navigate, I'm sure, with anything that's tied into pop culture. Like, it's such a fluid thing. Like, something will have a very viral moment and be popular for a very short amount of time, and you can never really predict like how much that's going to come in. Speaking of which, this is like, I love a lot of your sets. I love Emily Henry, and I just finished reading 6 of Crows, so I'm like definitely going in to get my coworker, and I really love it, and so I'm gonna go buy us. And we work in a library, so it's perfect. I'm going to go buy us No Mourners, No Funerals pencils. But
love it.
I laughed hysterically when I saw the Foxhole Court pencils, because that's such a niche. Like, I read those when they first came out, and I I went down a rabbit hole for a long time, and then it sort of faded, and I hadn't heard or seen anything about it for a minute. Did you read those? Is that like one you did for you, or was it a request? Like, how did those come about?
Yes. So it was one of those things where, like, because I'm chronically online and like, I'm always seeing like one fandom or another, I kind of am like looking at like fan art and stuff like that. So there was like, I was like watching this one show, and I was like following Tumblr for the show to like keep tabs on it and see what people were saying. And like you see fan art for All for the Game all the time. Mm-hmm. So I was like, what is this? And I kind of just like resisted it at first because it's like, this just really does not seem like my thing.
No. Well, and also if you like on paper, just like explain, like if somebody was like, explain to me the plot of this book, it's psychotic. Like it does not.
Oh yeah.
It does like, not make sense.
Lacrosse and the mafia, you know, it's like, yeah, you would never just like pick it up, you know?
No.
And so finally, I was talking about it with one of my friends and like this series. And she was like, oh, well, the first one is like free on Kindle or whatever. So I was like, okay, well, like, I'm just going to do it to see what people are talking about. So at least I could like understand the fan art. And then I just read the rest in like 2 days or something.
Yeah. Oh, I devoured them very similarly. That like seeing them on there made me want to go back and read them. That is another book. Like, again, it's psychotic, but that series is so quotable. Like there's a bunch of hysterical, like repetitive quotes in that.
I actually like went back and found this, like, cause we mentioned that we might talk about this. So I like went and looked up this hilarious review that I found of this series. And like, when I shared the pencils, I shared this review because I thought it was like perfectly like matched what it talks about. But the review is 5 stars. It's someone's review of the book, of the series. It says, it's 5 stars. Horrible book. These books are terrible and I love them so much. Not only is the writing abysmal on the same level as my 12-year-old self, but it is abundantly clear that Miss Nora knows nothing about the following subjects. Sports, gangs, mental health / trauma, drugs, psychotic or recreational, and gay people. Despite this, Miss Nora decided to write 3 books involving all of the above. The result is a ridiculously cringy and uncomfortable experience that I personally cannot get enough of. I read all 3 of these books and the 2 better fan-written unofficial sequels found on Archive of Our Own in about 24 hours.
Oh, okay. Didn't know about those. I'm to go find those. That's wild because I feel like I've devoured so much of the fan fiction. I don't know how I missed that.
I think there's one that's like in Andrew's perspective, like the entire series in Andrew's perspective. She's like, I cannot get enough of these books. I cannot get these books out of my head and they have forever changed who I am as a person. I have to continuously reiterate to people that I'm not recommending these books despite how much I ramble about them. Like, I don't know. It was just like
that encompasses it perfectly.
Yeah. It's so true. Like I would never recommend these books to people because they're literally unhinged, but like I am obsessed with them and would reread them again.
Yeah.
And it's funny because when I first released that set, I made 2 different sets with like different quotes and I only shared them on Tumblr. Cause I was like, I don't know if like Instagram will vibe with these because they're like, there's a lot of trauma involved and like content warning. So I was like, I'm going to leave these to Tumblr. And like, I sold out of them exclusively through advertising them on Tumblr.
Makes sense though.
And like a year or 2 later, someone like messaged me and was on Instagram and was like, oh, do you have a set for this? And I was like, you know what? I did. And so I brought them back, you know, and shared them on Instagram. But yeah, it was a fun thing because people who've read the series get it. So it was fun to make for that little niche group of fandom.
It is such a Tumblr, like 5-ish years ago Tumblr vibe, like that's how I found it. I think I found like the fan art or like a quote or something. And it was, I bought all 3, like I don't think they were free, but they were like $1.90, like it was super cheap. She had like self-published them. So I got in on it like in the ground floor of it and just like watching the fandom is insane. That review like fully encompasses like
I know I laugh every time like, I think about it.
It's so funny. It's great.
I love that
so much. Well, was there anything else that you wanted to share about the business or of the community? I love the community aspect of it too. It's like you get to interact and engage with different fandoms and different people who enjoy different things. That's really fun.
That's been amazing for me. Like 100% the most valuable thing that I've gotten is like being able to connect with people and like people that I would probably never connect with otherwise, you know, and like from all different kinds of fandoms, like, you know, the bookish community, but then Taylor Swift and then like K-pop and then, you know, just like people I would probably never meet in real life and maybe wouldn't interact with otherwise, like I get to connect with. And I've met the people that I meet through longhand pencils, like I meet them in real life because I just like form these really like special bonds with them. But yeah, I think in a lot of ways, like it's selfish because I get to like, you know, I love books and I love pop culture. So I get to like make that my business and how I use my time. But yeah, I think there's just a lot that, especially on the internet, that divides people. So it's just really nice to have a space where like people can just come together and talk about fun things and not serious things for a minute. And yeah, and I think a lot of the world sometimes wants us to make us feel bad about what we like and what we enjoy. And I just very much like to rebel against that because we need things that make us happy, especially now. And so I'm going to lean into that and like hopefully provide a space where people can connect and just feel good and happy about the things that they enjoy. Like I'm never going to shame someone for what they enjoy, you know, unless it's like actively hurting someone else. But we need those happy things. And so I want to help foster those kind of communities, but I really just love being able to connect with different people and just enjoy the things that we like.
Yeah, I very much agree. There is a sort of cultural ideology that like it's especially during COVID and like coming out of COVID, like there was this mentality that like, oh, we can't enjoy anything right now because everything is so terrible. But like, that's actually when you really need it. And I think especially like little things like a pencil or piece of stationery, getting to connect in that way and have that like little piece of dopamine in your life is a great, it's a great thing. I love that.
It's like definitely worth our time. And like, I hope people think like what I offer is worth their money too. Cause it's just like, yeah, life right now. And like, as adults, we just feel like we have to be so serious and we have to like, I don't know. And there is a lot of serious things and a lot of things that like require our serious concentration and like, you know, things that need to change in the world that we need to address and things like that. But I also think there's so much value in just like leaning into our joy and fostering that kind of like happiness with other people and encouraging that instead of trying to suppress it. Those kind of communities, even online, are very important. And one more thing I was going to say, where I lost my train of thought because I ramble a lot.
It's okay. That's kind of the theme of this podcast. That's my whole MO.
It's like that meme from The Office where Michael's like, sometimes I start a sentence and I don't even know where it's going, but I just keep going.
Yep.
But yeah, I just, I find a lot of value. Oh, the other thing I was going to say was like, there's a lot of science behind like writing by hand and like, just writing things out that is like, it's good for you. It like helps you remember things. It like is really calming and it helps you be more present. Like, and I think there's a lot of value in that as well, because, you know, like I said, like we are chronically online and it's really important to just take those moments to be present, to write things down. So I hope that I can just provide a product and an experience that's really fun and, you know, helps us find that joy, but also just like helps us to be present, to take those opportunities to write things down, to I think that's really important. It's good for us.
I think so too. Yeah, for sure. I have always especially with like my ADHD, and I have like a garbage memory. And so like writing down, like both having it to look back at and reference, but also the process of writing it, like you were saying, there's so much science behind how it improves your memory and it helps you like do that. And so also the thing I found recently, I mean, I've kind of always known this. I'm not as great about it as I feel like I should be, but especially this past year with like processing a lot of grief, like writing my thoughts out, like journaling that, and sort of feels like I'm physically writing it, feels like I'm physically getting it out of myself.
Yes.
And so I think that is such an important aspect of, or like, such an important thing that we don't necessarily think about when we look at something, like if you just sort of on the surface look at your business, it's very whimsical and fun, but like it does actually tie in a lot to some serious like scientific and like mental health stuff that I think is really, really cool.
Yeah. And I mean, my therapist is always encouraging me to journal. And like mm-hmm. when I, you know, I keep all of my old journals and, you know, as cringe as they are, like looking back through them is like always really transformative for me because I'm like, I was going through this really hard thing. I saw myself get through this challenge and can see like how I came out the other side. And even if it's just like, I'm sharing really stupid things, like, oh, like this is the boy I like at school or whatever. Like, I think those things are just valuable. Like I think recording things is valuable. And so, yeah, like looking, being able to look back on it, but also just like taking that time to be present and processing things, like you mentioned with grief, like it's really beneficial for processing things and working through emotions. And, you know, sometimes I get in the space where I'm like, I'm always listening to something. I'm always watching something. Like I will fill every second of my time. And so writing down something, whether I'm like writing a journal or writing a letter to somebody or whatever it is, like it's a moment where I'm not like filling my brain constantly with something where I can just like let my thoughts wander. And like, I don't have to be so productive. I can just like be. And
yeah,
that's really important.
I think so too. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I love this conversation. It was wonderful. I'm excited to share it. And so everyone can find you on Instagram at Longhand Pencils and on your website at longhandpencils.com. You have some great stuff. We'll make sure to link everything on Instagram and in the show notes so it is easy for everyone to find it. But
Thank you so much for having me. It was so fun to talk with you.
Absolutely, it was. Thanks so much for listening this week. Be sure to rate and review and tell a friend about the show. You can find us on Instagram at Tales from a Bibliophile. The Instagram has links for lots of our other cool things like Libro.fm and bookshop.org. Email us at talesfromabibliophile@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. See you next week.